This is a podcast of the 8 in a row champions. This is a podcast, a football fans podcast, and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. This week we see the return of St Anthony onto the podcast, and he and I discuss the victory over Aberdeen, forthcoming Rangers game, team selection for that game, and managerial position. But before we got into that, just to remind you that, of course, we have the annual Celtic FC Foundation bucket collection on the final day of the season against Hearts, where there will be badge number 8. So those of you who have collected badges through 1 through 7, now be getting tight. So if you think you can help out in the bucket collection, go online, look up the foundation details, and you'll see how you can become a bucket collector. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with him, St Anthony. So I am now joined by St Anthony. How are you doing, Saint?
Very well. How are you, Harry?
I'm excellent. How are you feeling about being a supporter of the 8 in a row Scottish champions?
Well, it's a nice feeling, and it's kind of weird because the first 8 in a row I can sort of remember it as a boy. Uh-huh. I was still in primary school, granted, but I vividly remember the day that we beat Hibs in 73 to win the league title in the last game of the season.
Right.
And I have to say that it's brought back a lot of happy memories because of the, looking back in bygone days and recalling happy memories. But as far as it is in the modern era, then I think we can be quietly satisfied with what we've achieved this season, because it's been a very, very difficult season and there's been a lot of obstacles. And it hasn't been as easy as maybe we anticipated back in July.
Do you know, so we'll get on to the obstacles, but to talk about the 9 in a row thing first, the 8 in a row first of all, if somebody pointed out to me that when we got to the 9, the previous record had been 7.
Yeah.
In a row. So actually, they were talking about, it was a conversation about how motivated we might be to go for 11, 12 and 13. And this person's point was, actually, last time when we got 9, the big deal was getting to 8. We then got to 9 and it didn't happen. I just have the vaguest recollections of winning 9 in a row. Did you think in the, not to sound like a too bold old farce, did you think in the darkest days of pre-Fergus that you would see us winning 8 in a row?
No, I have to confess that never in my wildest dreams did I see that coming. But I think it's quite interesting. I was talking to somebody the other day who said to me that his view was that Scottish football changed utterly when we beat Rangers 6-2 in the year 2000. Because if you look at the league titles since then, mm-hmm. we've won them all, I think, apart from one season, finished second to Rangers, but apart from one season, I think the Mowbray season was just one of these seasons we never get going.
Yeah.
But his point was that we could have won every one of those titles with a wee bit of luck, and also the titles that Rangers were winning, we now know that they were having underhand methods of having to try and cope with us.
Yeah.
So that's quite fascinating to think that's almost a 20-year period of sustained success.
Oh, I mean, if you think about the Seville season, I always remember, when we didn't win that by one goal, I always remember, mm-hmm. Somebody asking Mark Hately, did he think that Celtic's UEFA Cup run had played an impact? And he said, on pressing, because he obviously didn't want to say yes, on pressing, he said, "Oh, but I think Rangers would have still won the league. But perhaps if Celtic hadn't had the UEFA Cup run, the title might have been closer, closer than a goal."
I know.
But you're right. Seville season, because we did sort of go on a run. In fact, the Seville season, your point about luck. If we hadn't given away a last-second corner to Jim Duffy's Dundee,
yeah, That's right.
And switched off when mm-hmm. the corner mm-hmm. came in.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have gone in. I know. And then, as you rightly say, if they hadn't been spending everybody else's money, we would be looking at 20 in a row.
Well, the thing is, when you look at how close it was in 2003, how close it was in 2005, how close it was in 2009, where the last two games, Gordon Strachan blew it by being too, in my opinion, he was too defensive in the last two games, particularly the one at Easter Road. And those titles could easily be ours, easily.
And the one at Easter Road is the one that I think I've told this tale on the podcast before, where... what was his name? Oh, God. I was going to say Xander Diamond, but it wasn't Xander Diamond. He played for St Mirren as well.
David Van Zanten.
And he was a Celtic fan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was getting... Hibs had nothing to play for. Someone I know knows him. And so the person I know who told me this tale would be telling me the truth. And it was getting close to the end of the game and it was 0-0. So he deliberately fouled, I think it would have been Nakamura.
Mm-hmm.
He deliberately fouled Nakamura to give away a penalty so that we could win the game. And could not believe it when the referee didn't give a penalty. So I know that to be 100% true. So,
oh dear.
Your mate's point about fine margins and luck,
mm-hmm,
and also dodgy refereeing decisions mm-hmm. come into play. So, so let's talk about the Aberdeen game. So, what did you think when you saw the team?
The team is on expected lines. To be honest, Simunovic and Ayer have settled into the centre back partnership. Tierney played, which was a wee bit surprised at, because if he's as badly injured as what some people claim, then that boy should frankly be in hospital now getting treatment, getting an operation of some sort, so that he's fit when the time July, August comes, when he's really going to be needed. And then the rest of the team sort of picked itself in many ways. And it was quite a settled team, you know. It was the what I would call the usual suspects.
Do you know the thing that struck me? Your point about Tierney. See, when you think about how little Tierney has played since the New Year game, I know we keep saying it. I mean, I've heard two accounts. So, interestingly, I was told, you know, originally we were told that he needed a hip operation in the Christmas time. We were told in the summer he's going to get a hip operation. And then when he was out for the first month after the end of the winter break, so effectively he'd not played for 2 months, I remember thinking, well, why didn't we just send him away for the operation then? And then about a month or so ago, I was told that actually there was no operation for his hip problem. That it was just a case that we were going to have to nurse him through, and just fingers crossed that a lack of game time would allow his, you know, would give his body sufficient recovery time. And it was a compounding thing of his body starting to stop grow, but principally his body's been growing while mm-hmm. he's had all this pressure, you know, all the pressure put on his system from playing a lot of football, and that was the problem. And then about 2 weeks after, and that was told, I was told that by three pretty reliable people. And then about 2 weeks after that, oh, he's going for a double hernia operation in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not quite sure which one, but if he is going for any sort of operation, you're right. Why not just send him for the operation?
I know.
Shows you how little trust they've got in the potential deputies.
Yeah, but we really don't have any. But I mean, it is Aguirre's best days are past him. Johnny Hayes tries his best at left back, but he's clearly not a defender. So really what you have to do in the summer then is you have to get somebody who's a capable left back but knows if Tierney's fit, then he's not going to be the main man, and that's very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the principle of Aguirre, I understood. Mm-hmm. You're signing someone who knows the club, who's not going to be absolutely desperate to find out, you know, will still come to the club even though he's not going to be first choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, we let him go because he was past it.
Yeah.
So 18 months later, he was hardly going to be better, was he?
No.
So the other thing, when I saw the team, I then thought, right, okay, we're playing Tierney, so Neil Lennon's really wanting to go for this and get this win and get it done and dusted.
Mm.
So how did you think when the game started? How did you think we were playing?
I thought we were a wee bit hit and miss at the beginning because Edward had a chance that he could have probably done better with, but then at the other end, we were fortunate that Aberdeen had a couple that on another day they might have scored from.
Yeah.
But I'm absolutely overjoyed by Lustig's goal. It was a wonderful goal. To use the conditions like that, it was very, very clever because it could easily came to him. He could easily try to volley that,
mm-hmm.
or slide in, and to throw himself, make such a good connection, and then use the wet grass to get the skidding off the grass to get the power by the goalkeeper. It was a tremendous goal. So it was.
I remember
absolutely
diving headers count as double.
Aye. So, and it was spectacular as well, you know.
What do you think? What did he make of his celebrations?
Lustig celebrations.
Aye, because he was doing all this waving his hands and, you know, that sort of angry look that players sometimes have.
You know, to be honest, I never noticed. We were too busy cheering the goal, watching it on TV. But the thing that nobody's mentioned is what a wonderful ball for Callum McGregor.
Yeah.
To actually see the run from Lustig, and you know, it was Lustig's goal all the way, and it wasn't an easy chance to take, but it was a vision that McGregor showed by opening up a defence for that opportunity. It was sublime.
I mean, the one thing I did think on Sunday, or Saturday rather, you're right about the chances that Aberdeen had, but despite that, the thing that had given me heart even before we scored was, we were playing at a faster pace than we played the week before against Kilmarnock.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So once we scored, did you think that was it, or did you think Aberdeen might still come into it? What were your thoughts?
I have to confess, I thought that was it. I can't say otherwise because I think Aberdeen are on a downer at the moment. They're finishing the season quite a low point. Given the fact that they've been losing games, and they were, I actually saw about the Rangers Aberdeen game the week before, and I thought they were a poor lot then,
mm-hmm.
and that was reflected in Saturday. The thing about Aberdeen is they're very well organised. McInnes has got a good defensive setup, but they have no creativity.
Yeah.
I mean, in the last few years, they've lost Johnny Hayes, Niall McGinn's not the player he was. The guy Madison that they had that went back to Leicester or Southampton. So they've had these players who gave them a wee... Ryan Christie, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
These guys gave them a different dimension. They don't have that now. And really all they do is play balls up to that big Cosgrove guy. And very one-dimensional.
Yeah. I'm the same. I mean, when that went in, the first thing that went through my head was, for us to not win the league today, they need to score two goals and they're not going to score two goals.
Yeah.
So,
and the other thing we need to give credit to as well is like the strength of Celtic's title win this season has been the defence,
mm-hmm.
And it seems a strange thing to say it because at different times of the season a lot of players defensively have been getting criticised. Boyata was criticised, Simunovic was criticised,
Benkovic, who was our star player, was out injured.
He was, and I think he was a big loss because he was really playing at a level that I don't think we've seen since Virgil van Dijk,
mm-hmm.
a few years ago. So I think we've lost 17 goals in 34 league, in fact, 17 goals in 36 league games, which is less than one every two games. Now, unusually for us, Rangers have outscored us this season.
Yep.
And it'll probably come in the next two games, unless something drastic happens, that they'll score more goals in the league than us. Now, that has to be rectified next season, because I think, in an attacking sense, I don't think we've done a great deal, because we've relied heavily on Edward, because he was our only recognised forward. Lee Griffiths has had his issues. Dembele left, but we got Bayo in, but it's not quite worked for him yet.
But there was a period just before Christmas when, you know, you were really concerned that if anything happened, we had no striker.
Yeah, well, but when you think we went to Ibrox with Mikey Johnson at the centre forward.
But Mikey Johnson played, what, 3-4 games in a row as a striker?
I don't think he was the worst player at Ibrox, but I think it hurt us at that point. If you look back at Ibrox, with Mikey Johnson at centre forward and Callum McGregor at left back. Mm-hmm. Now, and apparently a few of the other ones were the walking wounded.
Yep.
So, you know, that's not to make an excuse, because we were very, very poor in the day, and any Celtic team should have played better than that. But the point I'm making here is, in one clumsy way, is that the defence deserved great credit, because that was the foundation of the title success.
And one of the things that we did, the second goal, was scored by a defender, Simonovic getting his second goal in 2 weeks, and it was a defender scoring a header direct from a free kick, from a corner mm-hmm. kick. We'll get on to the manager in a minute, no doubt. The one thing I would say, I think Simonovic has been back to the player that he was in the first sort of 6-9 months that he was at the club in recent weeks.
Yeah, I think in the second half of Brendan's first season, when we won the first treble, Simonovic was terrific. I'm trying to think, at that point it was probably Boyata he was playing with as a defensive partner. That summer he was rated in the 10 million bracket.
Mm-hmm.
And there was rumours about Southampton and other teams.
We got an £8 million offer from Burnley and knocked it back.
There you go. So he now looks like an £8 million player to me. I don't know what's been going on there, whether it's been injuries or where he's been dispirited in some way because he's not been allowed to leave or whatever, but he certainly looks back to the player that he was a few seasons ago.
Well, if you think about it, he'd actually ended up becoming the fourth choice centre-half this season, because Brendan's first two, preferred two, were Boyata and Benkovic,
yep,
followed by Ayer.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And Simonovic was fourth. In fact, there was a period there where it was Benkovic, Boyata, Ayer, then Henry, and then Simonovic. So maybe part of his problem was he didn't fancy being fourth and fifth choice.
I
was disillusioned on it. So second goal, you were pleased about that, a corner kick, and we score from that.
The shot was too much for me, to be honest. But and a serious note, again, it's coming from McGregor's delivery. You know, it was a terrific corner that he put in, and Simonovic did well. In fact, Simonovic has been unlucky the last few weeks, not to score more goals. He really looks a threat when he comes forward. I mean, Aberdeen at Hampden, he had a couple of great runs and shots.
And so then after that, the final sort of final piece of it was Edward's third goal to make it.
Well, Edward scoring that goal, I think, takes him up to 21 for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you think of the number of games that boy's missed, the fact that some teams we weren't playing to his strengths, I'm a great believer that if he could get a full season, I think he's a 30-35 goal season guy. And I think the other thing about Edward is, not only will he score you goals, he'll also score some beauties. He's got that in him.
Oh, and I definitely think you saw when, much as, you know, whatever we want to say about Rangers, they are the second best team in Scotland. And when we played mm-hmm. them at Celtic Park, you could clearly see there is a massive gulfing class between him and Morelos. They're not even... It's like when people... I mean, I'm not saying that the players are the same, but it's the same principle. When people would say, oh, Chris Boyd scored the same amount of goals as Henrik Larsson. Aye. Mm-hmm. But in terms of quality of player, it's not even close to the same quality of player, all-round player, to what he did. So,
well, the thing about... Morelos seems to score goals against... he doesn't seem to be too prolific against the top six. He seems to score more against the bottom teams.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Edward is more rounded and will get you goals against all the opposition and also in Europe.
I think actually Edouard's probably better against superior opposition than the ones when we are playing the lesser teams and everybody's just camped in. It's more suited to his game that mm-hmm. against better mm-hmm. opposition there's space to run into and things like that. So so we've secured the title. But in the intervening period, we've had the sad times of the funeral of Billy McNeil and the passing of Stevie Chalmers. You went to the McNeil. You went to Celtic Park for Big Billy, didn't you?
Yeah, I was there. And as much as I saw that the hearse come down the Celtic Way and pass by, there was a wonderful crowd there. It's difficult to gauge how many people were there actually, because every part of the stadium looked full. And as much as run about the Celtic shop, run about the statues, the Celtic Way, behind the Celtic end, and then when you came down onto Kerrydale Street, it was full. Come down onto London Road, people were all along London Road. It was a wonderful tribute to Big Billy. And I'm very disappointed, actually, I never got to Stevie Chalmers. Was it yesterday?
Yeah.
Because pressure of work meant that I couldn't get away. I'm disappointed in that.
I mean, I know it's a funeral, it's not quite the same thing, you know, talking about. But it's almost like the passing of Stevie Chalmers has been completely overshadowed because it happened so close to Billy McNeil. You wrote a great piece on the site and, you know, he scored the most important goal in Scottish football history. Possibly in British football history, because it was the goal that broke the glass ceiling of British clubs being able to play at the elite level. But it sort of has passed by because it was just for immediately following Big Billy. So after that sad, funeral of Stevie Chalmers, we've got a game coming up at the weekend against Rangers. So a couple of things for that game. First of all, the sort of chat that's sort of passed me by in terms of its serious, in terms of the how some people are agitated by it. Guard of Honour. What's your position on a Guard of Honour for Rangers not doing it for us?
Guard of Honours are not for me, I have to say. I think that they're an old-fashioned concept that goes back to a time when sportsmanship was more prevalent in the game and that kind of thing was expected. I think in the modern era, then, I don't have any problem with them not giving us a Guard of Honour. And I do have to say that when they won the league in 2010, we played them at Celtic Park and we didn't give them a Guard of Honour. So my argument is let it go. And it's good for a noise up. And it clearly has put a few noses out of joint, a few blue noses out of joint in Twitter and things like that. So it's been good for a noise up, but it's not for me.
I agree. I don't understand why I see some Celtic fans getting agitated that they're not going to do it. Because, for a start, there'd be no sincerity behind what they're doing it, for a start. You'd only want them to do it because you know that they'd be doing what they didn't want to do. And, you know, really, what does it matter? Really? We're going there as 8-in-a-row champions. What does it matter whether they applaud us on or not?
I know. No, I don't have any. I don't have any problem. But if they did do it, then that's up to them. If they don't want to do it, then I'm not. That doesn't bother me.
So that's that. Next thing is the team. So somebody suggested to me after the Kilmarnock game, knows his football. And as a Celtic fan, said, look, I think once we tie up the league, the most important game is winning the treble. So we make sure that as we don't risk injuries, certainly not to, you know, some of the key positions. We've not got much cover for fullbacks, and certainly not got much cover for Edouard. So we should play as many fringe players as we think we can get away with against Rangers and Hearts. So, I'd not really thought about it. So, I remembered that yesterday. I put it up on Twitter to get people's opinion, and I would say it was 70-30 of people saying, not a chance in hell, we play our strongest team. What's your thoughts?
Right, I can see both viewpoints, because the first thing to say is that your mate is right. The Hearts Cup final is the most important game of the three remaining fixtures. There's no doubt about that. However, when it comes to going to Ibrox, there's two things that I think are quite important here. The first one is we let ourselves down totally in December, and I mean really, really badly. I never thought that any Celtic team could play as badly as that under Brendan Rodgers is what we did that day. It was desperately bad stuff. So you want to go on Sunday and put that right because of the last time.
Yep.
The second thing is you want to set down a wee marker here as well, because if you go and play the game and say Rangers were to win 2-0, right, you're giving them a lift for next season, you're giving them momentum for next season. So really what I want to do is to go to Ibrox, regardless of who plays, and send a message out that we're still the main men and that you're still some distance behind us. Because although it's been a bad season, although the league race, the perception is that it's been closer this season. And let's face it, round about the new year it was close, because they caught us in points, mm-hmm. although we had a game in hand. They haven't come up to our level, we've come down to them. So, and I think that's important to remember. I don't think they've got any better. They've got marginally better, but I think we've got considerably poorer than we were in the last two seasons.
Do you think so?
So that being the case, it would be good to put down a marker in Sunday and just send a message out that, you know, that we're still the champions and you are still some considerable distance behind us.
I mean, I agree to some extent. The one thing, I don't know. I think we're pretty much, I think this season will be pretty similar to last season.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've forgotten that last season, after we lost our unbeaten run, we had some pretty crappy performances.
I think the thing about last season is we basically won the league by the new year, because we were so far in front. It was never a league race last season. Although round about then, but when we lost the unbeaten record
at
when we beat the Hearts, it was a poor game against Hibs, and there was a few stupid draws along the way as well. So it meant at the end of the season it probably looked closer than what it should have been. But this season, I think we never really get started in many ways. The other point I would make as well is, and I put this in an article in the website, is I've already said that I think that the rock which gave us the title was the defence. Mm-hmm. But it also has to be said, is wonderful, wonderful home record. To play, I think at the moment it's 16 wins and 2 draws.
Yeah, and those 2 draws, I mean, I'm not meaning, this isn't a criticism of Neil Lennon, it's just a comment. Those 2 draws have come in 2 of our last 3 home games. Again, yeah, when the league was virtually won, when it was, Celtic just need to win the next game and, you know, just need a win and a draw and they're champions. And we drew with Aberdeen and we drew with Livingston.
Yeah, and it goes to show how bad, or how inconsistent, rather, we've been away from home. And that's another thing we need to rectify for next season, because you shouldn't be going to places like St Mirren and Motherwell and drawing, frankly. But with all due respect to them, and they're trying their best, and at the end of the day, it's 11 men against 11 men. But some of the away results this season have been, really poor by our standards.
But I mean, I would need to look at the actual run of games. From memory, we were particularly poor until about the middle of September. Mm-hmm. Were we not something like 5th or 6th in the table at the end of September, beginning of October?
I'm sure after 6 games we had 6 points.
Aye. And that was in the period when Brendan was particularly pissed off because the club were not hadn't spent the money because they'd found out what he was up to.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, basically, it was during that time that Brendan and the board were briefing against each other in the press.
Mm-hmm. The other point I've made to Rangers supporters that I know is they've missed a trick this season, because if there is a season that they could have done a bit of damage, then this was it. And in fairness to them, I think they had that feeling at New Year that we were there for the taking, which is why they went out and got Defoe and Davis. Now, it's backfired on them because those transfers haven't worked out for them. And of course, them a mega amount of money in wages, but they're probably raging that they did that now. But the point is, I don't see us, I hope not anyway, my point to them is that I don't see us next season being as poor as this season. I am hoping that regardless of who the manager is, we're going to sign five or six quality players and push on.
I mean,
in many ways, I don't think we can play as badly this season, next season, as what we did this season.
I mean, one of the things I would say, I think Mark Cooper made this a couple of weeks ago in the podcast, and it's one of the reasons why, for years, I always thought there should be an 18-team top league, you know, like a team like Hibs or Hearts or Aberdeen. They win 3-4 games in a row. You know, this was pre Rangers dying. They win 3-4 games in a row, then they play Rangers and get beat. And then that sort of defeats their momentum, you know, kills their momentum. They start get going again, they win 3 games in a row, then they play Celtic and get beat. And then that sort of kills the momentum and they draw the next game, lose the next game. And then they get going again, win 3 games in a row, then they play Celtic again or Rangers again and get beat. And playing Celtic and Rangers 4 times in a season kills any momentum for these, killed any momentum for these other clubs. And an 18 team league would have, I always felt, would have given a third team in Scotland a chance to go on a run of winning 7-8, as Aberdeen have done in the last few years, go on a run of winning 7-8 games and actually getting some positive momentum, so that maybe when they come to play Celtic Rangers they draw instead of losing, because they're on that feel-good thing. And in the same sort of... The point being, actually, you could stay on our coattails just by being the best of the rest. And see that the players... And I think that's been a bit of Rangers' success, in inverted commas, this season, in that... I think you're right. I don't think they've dramatically improved. But I do think Aberdeen have gone backwards and Kilmarnock have stood still. Kilmarnock have stood still in the principle of Kilmarnock being leaps and bounds ahead of where they were, you know. But what I mean by that is Rangers look better because they have managed to be the better than everybody else other than us. And if you can be to put in a title challenge to Celtic until about 4 or 5 games to go, all you need to do is be infinitely better than everybody else. And based on Rangers' budget, you know, just thinking about your point, based on Rangers' budget, they should be infinitely better than everybody else. In the same way that we should be infinitely better than them.
That's correct.
And looking at the types of players that Rangers are talking about signing at the moment, you know, some of the players they've got in, which are just the best players of Motherwell and the best players of Dundee, I actually think for next season they've resigned themselves to being just better than everybody else and staying as close as they can to us until 3 or 4 games to go and it'll look all right.
It'll be interesting to see who else they get, because normally, even under Warburton and under Cashinha, they push the boat out in the summer to get maybe one high profile signing. I mean, when you think of Warburton, he get Joey Bartlin, he get Senderos. Now, these were guys who were well past their best, but they came to Scotland with a reputation, but they were names. And then Cashinha brought in, who was the Portuguese centre-half?
Oh, yeah, Bruno Alves.
So he was going to build the team around Bruno Alves. So these guys, the point I'm making is, they didn't come cheaply. Even at the end of their career, you need to pay them £20,000, £25,000, £30,000 at least to come to the back water of Scottish football. So it'll be interesting to see in the summer whether Gerrard is happy to build his team around these young boys who don't have any great experience or any great pedigree, or whether they'll do what they did in January and go and try and sign a couple of hardened English professionals that'll come here and try and help those boys develop.
Well, that's for them. Onto us. So, So do you, you know, you've gone through the pros and cons. Do you think we will play our fullest, strongest team on Saturday or not?
If I was Neil Lennon's shoes, I would be tempted to play 9 of the first team and 2 youngsters or fringe players. Just to break it up a wee bit. Now, I'm a big fan of Ewan Henderson. I think any time I've seen him, I've never failed to be impressed. And apparently he's really, he was terrific against Rangers in the Glasgow Cup final there a week or two ago. So I'd be tempted to play somebody like him just to give him the experience that hopefully will be beneficial next season when he gets that behind them. Because I know that you and I and some of the other guys that we're in contact with have been looking at the Ajax thing and saying, well, you know, Ajax bloodied all these boys and stood by them, and yet we seem loath to give boys the odd game. And this is an ideal situation because it's like, at the end of the day, if you do get beat, then I have no intentions of going there and getting beat, to be honest with you. But because at the end of the day, I want to beat them on every occasion. But at the end of the day, if you go and get beat, this is the one to lose because it is a meaningless fixture.
Oh, and don't forget, when we played at Hampden, in the Hampden season, 24 years ago, last week, I think it was?
Mm-hmm.
They came to Hampden and we beat them 3-0.
3-0. Now, it was amazing in those days when it came to the last fixture against them, how many that we actually won. We won a fair few of them.
Yeah.
And it gave us hope that somehow that the next season we were going to push on for there and it never ever happened.
Do you know, that's actually what somebody said to me. They're replicating us the bulk of the season. They're not touching us. And then... Mm-hmm. Towards the end of the season, they're getting a couple of results, which then makes them think, oh, you know what, maybe next season's the season. And we did that through their 9 in a row.
Definitely. There was more than a few seasons that happened, and you know, we won the odd fixture, but we never won the important fixtures. We never won we very rarely won the opening fixture, and I think we went through a period of 10 years that we never won the New Year fixture.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was always the crucial one, the December-January game. It is always a real bonus if you can win that.
Because I remember when we won in the season that stopped the 10, when we won when Paul Lambert's striking the top corner, people making the comment that for the previous, it was something like the previous 11 seasons, of which 9 of them have been Rangers. The team who won that game won the league.
Yeah, yeah. And that was, looking back on that was... You know, there was a few results that season that people think were pivotal, but I think out of them all, that was the one that gave us the confidence to push on for there.
And the other thing that I did think was interesting, the comment you made about Ajax there, I put that on Twitter because genuinely I was interested to hear people's opinion. As I say, 70-30 saying, no, player strongest team. A lot of these replies coming in during the Ajax game, when the same people were praising the fact that Ajax had all these youngsters and were playing the semi-final of the European Cup. And that's because Ajax had played these youngsters. I mean, when Ajax were at Juventus and they needed to win, they needed to get the tie won, they brought on a youngster for the last 50 minutes who'd never played first team football before, or had played something like an hour of first team football in his life. So at the same time as people are tweeting me saying we shouldn't play young players, I'm watching a team who were playing young players. And the thing that really, really, you know, the benefit of doing this podcast, one of the things that really sticks in my mind from all the time I did the podcast, is Stylian Petrov saying the thing that transformed him as a player was being told, no matter what, by Kenny Dalglish, no matter what, you're getting the next 10 games.
10 games, yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you what's an interesting thing to consider. It isn't that long ago since we played Ajax in the Europa League.
Yep.
Now, I think, off the top of my head, I think that was the autumn of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was nothing between the teams. We drew 2 each in Amsterdam in a game we should probably have won. And they beat us 2-1 at Parkhead with a bit of a freak goal in the last minute.
Thanks to Scott Allen.
Thanks to Scott Allen. rather than whip the ball into the middle, he tried to beat a guy and he lost.
He's
the
last man who tries to beat someone.
The point I'm making is there was nothing between the teams at that point. We were very, very similar in every way. Mm-hmm. And yet you look how they've pushed on in the level that they're at the moment. And look where we are in a similar vein. And somebody was on Radio Clyde there, that I think, last week saying that virtually that entire Celtic 11 are still there.
Yeah.
We haven't really had a purge of players as such. Probably because we've still been, for God's sake, we've been winning trebles, to be honest.
Partly because the previous manager, who did a fantastic job to win the trebles, mm-hmm. couldn't spot a decent player in the transfer market if he slapped him in the face.
Well, there was Dembele, there was Sinclair, there was Cham, there was Edward. There was a few.
There was
Martin
Compeer, there was Lee Hayes.
Absolutely.
There was Hendry, there was Hayes. There was Gamboa, there was Toljan,
De Vries,
Koundé
Benyu.
Yeah. Yeah, he was not. Because actually, that was one of the things. See, against Kilmarnock, we had six players starting against Kilmarnock who were at the club when Neil Lennon was previously manager.
Yeah, yeah. But I noticed that as well.
So that's, you know, your point about not moving players on was really demonstrated when we played Kilmarnock.
Mm-hmm.
That we had all these people still on the park. I mean, that's some of them not a bad thing. You know, some of them is James Forrest and Callum McGregor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People who are academy players that come through. So, you know, not the end of the world there. The only way that we are going to get, you know, we regularly have young players who are, you know, I asked someone who's in the coaching staff at Celtic, you know, recently, you know, are our young players just not quite good enough, or is there something else? And he replied, said it's really simple. From the age of 17 to 20, they've got to have lots of game. They've got to have game time, yeah, at a decent level. Otherwise, they'll not develop.
Here's an interesting one. There's been talk recently that Celtic are looking at the boy Turnbull at Motherwell. Mm-hmm. Now, apparently, he's an attacking midfield player. He scores goals. He's good at getting forward. He makes runs into the box. Now, I don't think he can be a better player than Ewan Henderson. I might be wrong in that because I haven't seen a great deal of him, but the pedigree that Ewan Henderson has got in terms of youth caps, in terms of reputation at youth level, and he's pushing through, then you would think, why are we interested in another team's player when we have someone at the club who is probably technically better than the Motherwell boy, but just isn't getting experience?
And that's
which is why. Which is why Callum McGregor had to go to Notts County to develop, because he was never going to develop here.
Yeah, and that's I remember lots of people wanting us to sign McFadden from Motherwell. Mm-hmm. And I can remember saying to people, I don't think he's a better player than Sean Maloney.
That was the same.
The difference is, he's playing first team football and Sean Maloney's not, because Sean Maloney's got... And the problem with Sean Maloney was initially a striker when he was always better to have been a number 10. And
yeah.
So he had Sutton, Hartson, Larson in front of him. He was mm-hmm. never going to get in the team.
I always thought that, to be fair to Gordon Strachan, he found the best niche for Maloney in the team, which was left midfield cutting in, you know, yeah, playing in an attacking role. You know, Nakamura was wide right. Maloney was wide left, so it meant when you were defending that they could easily tuck in and defend in terms of numbers.
Yep.
But when you were in the attack, he had a great season that season. He played that role. Wonderful.
Which is, again, one of the things that people have talked about, you know, I think was I didn't really see it too much. You know, I didn't read too much of the detail of it, but again, they were talking about Colts teams getting into mm-hmm. the lower leagues. And see, for the good of Scottish football, because we've got the best youngsters. The very fact, you know, the fact that they're at Celtic means that they will be the best youngsters in Scottish football. So, you know, again, that was always my point about when, you know, let's sign McFadden. Well, the very fact that he's at Motherwell and Maloney's at Celtic means when it came down to choosing between, and I'm not saying there was a direct choice at any point, but you get my, you'll get the point. At some point when the youth system and players are coming through, Maloney must have been, the youth players at Celtic at 14, 15, 16 must have been better than the youth players at Motherwell at 14, 15, 16, and that's why they're at Celtic, and that's why those boys are at Motherwell. So what then happens at 19 that makes us want to sign that guy from Motherwell and say to our guy, I'm sorry, you're not going to make it, and let him go? Well, the difference is because Motherwell have to play him and he plays first team football at Motherwell. Or whatever. But playing if you are interested in the general good of the Scottish game and Scottish football, surely there's, you know, you look at Spain and Italy and, you know, lots of countries have B teams for the main team, for them to, so that the younger players can get first team football. And I looked at our squad, and there's 5 or 6 players that we've signed from other Scottish teams, but the other Scottish teams are SPL team level teams. You know, Ryan Christie, we signed him from Inverness, so they were an SPL team at the time. They're currently second tier. Yeah. And 6 or 7 players who came through our academy. Nobody who we picked up from a team out with the sort of 10 teams below us, 10, 11 teams below us. When was the last time teams like Alloa, teams like Brechin, all of these teams, when did they ever, Stenhouse Muir, when did they ever generate players who make it at the top level of Scottish football?
You know, that's a good point, because, you know, if you go back maybe 30 years or so, Cowdenbeath had Craig Levine. He came through, right, an exceptional player. East Fife had Gordon Jury, who went on to have a great career with Hibs and Chelsea and Rangers. So, you know, there was the odd wee gem that you could pick up in the lower leagues in those days. And you're right, I don't know what's going on these days, because I don't see enough football at that level. But it's patently obvious that even your Aberdeens and Hibs and Hearts aren't going down to that level to look for players. They would rather bring in a lone player for Stoke City or a lone player for Birmingham for the season, rather than take a gamble on a boy who's maybe currently playing for Dumbarton or playing for Raith Rovers. So that's disappointing, and I think that only reflects the lack of talent that is out there. You know, we no longer produce the Dalglishes and the Dennis Laws and the Jimmy Johnsons that we did in previous generations. In fact, to be honest, we're no longer producing the Charlie Nicholases and the Ali McCoys and the Paul McStays that we had a generation later. And that isn't only reflected at the SPL level, that's reflected down the leagues.
But I'm not saying these clubs get put out of business, but they should be allowed to find their own level. I mean, personally, I would have, you know, as I said before, I'd have a top league of 18, a second league of 10. That's the professional game. You know, I could see an argument for actually 2 leagues of 12, even a top league of 12 and a second league of 12, and 4 Colts teams of the top 4 teams in the SPL playing in that league of 12 or whatever in the second tier. And that's where all the money gets concentrated, in those top 20 to 25, 26, 27, 28 teams, whatever it is. And then all the other teams find their level. I mean, really, Stranraer, Montrose, Brechin, Forfar, East Fife.
I was horrified to listen to the I heard something in the radio the yesterday, and somebody says, "Oh, what we should do is we should make the league up to the leagues up to 44 teams." And you're thinking, well, certainly I was thinking that no, this isn't a good thing. What you should be doing is reducing the amount of professional teams that we have, because, see, to be honest, see the fourth division, whatever they call it, you know, whatever the title is, the Scottish League Division 2, the fourth tier is essentially junior football.
Well, that's my point. I'm not saying these clubs go out of business, but find their own level. And the level is playing with the juniors, that sort of level. In fact, I remember speaking to a guy who was had wanted to invest in Scottish football. Excuse me, he'd wanted to invest in Scottish football and had thought that he would put some money in and he could start at quite a low level and see. And he was at Forfar. And he said he then realised that actually they didn't want to be promoted. They didn't want to go above the third tier. They actually quite liked being in the third and fourth tier of Scottish football, where they met the same chairman and they went to the same clubs and they just met the guys they were pally with. And the problem with going up on the odd occasion when they then got promoted, I mean, it's like, as you know, I used to play cricket and I played at a level where it was quite competitive. But once every so often, we would have a good season and we'd get promoted to the next level up. And the next level up, every team would have a pro playing for them, usually from either South Africa or Pakistan or India. That's where it would be. And that guy, that pro would be infinitely better than us. Our club couldn't afford a pro, so every sort of third year we would get promoted and get thumped every week. And we would lose players, because actually people just want to go and play and enjoy themselves. Nobody wants to lose every week. And so I get that concept of the likes of Forfar and all these teams, and Stenhousemuir and East Fife and East Stirling being quite happy at that level. And then when they go up to the second tier, they get thumped every week, they finish bottom of the table and get relegated. And then they're back down to their comfort zone level, which is fine, but give them that level and go and play there. Don't suck the money out of the professional game. So you're taking you're taking £30,000-£40,000 or whatever it is out of the game. And okay, that would make no difference to Celtic. But if you took away 20 of the teams who are taking £10,000-£30,000, whatever it is, out of the game, took that money and concentrated it in the top 24 teams or the top 26 teams, that suddenly is making an extra £200,000 difference to someone like Dundee. That transforms everything.
Yeah, I tell you what, I was surprised that this idea of putting the folks teams into the lower leagues is the new thing. I mean, Jock Stein was talking about it in the early 70s. But what surprised me was in my Twitter timeline that there's Morton fans, Partick Thistle fans, St Mirren fans, good guys, genuine football fans that I like to correspond with and communicate with. And I was gobsmacked at the vitriol shown towards Celtic and Rangers for mooting this idea about the Colts teams. And I couldn't get to the bottom of what the problem was, because the Colts teams will go into the lower leagues, understandably, on a no-promotion basis, because you couldn't have the Celtic...
You couldn't have the same league, yeah.
No, and the thing is as well, with the resources that Celtic would have behind them, even a Celtic B team, then it would probably fly through the leagues. So I totally get the thing about that if they do get in, it's on a no promotion basis. But I was really, really surprised at the reaction from the supporters who I quite admire in other ways, who are dead set against this idea.
I think part of it is their fear that something happens. Like, so imagine we play Morton. We're our B team's in the second tier, and we play Morton, and we beat them 2-0 or whatever, and Morton are either going for the title or Morton are trying to avoid relegation. And then a few weeks later, we go to play a team that's neck and neck with Morton, Dunfermline, right? But we've got an injury crisis for the first team. So five of the team who started against Morton are not available for the Dunfermline game because they've been promoted to the first team squad. And Dunfermline beat us.
Well, that clearly wouldn't be the case, because you need to sign contracts at the beginning of the season. You can't just move clubs willy-nilly.
Well, that was... that for me, I mean, I think that's the fear that people have got. And for me, I mean, I think maybe you might have the big team saying, well, we've got to have the ability to dip in and take those players, because if we don't, and we do have an injury crisis, suddenly we can't get them, But you would need to have some structure of, even if there's a core group of players who can't flick between the two or something like that. Mm-hmm. You would need to have some system where you couldn't do that. But in terms of developing the game, you're then giving these youngsters, they would be playing against experienced professionals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the nuance of that side of the game that they would be learning from it. And if it works in so many European countries that are successful, then I don't see what the issue is with us. So one of the comments you made when I said about what team would you play, said if I was Neil Lennon. So that is the thing that you have to throw into the mix when you're considering, you know, remember Martin O'Neill brought on Sean Maloney?
He did, uh-huh.
Against Rangers, and then played a complete reserve team, and we thumped Hearts at Tynecastle. Remember Sean Maloney and Simon Lynch were arguing over a penalty kick?
That's right. Yeah.
But the difference is, Neil Lennon probably feels like if he wants the Celtic job, he's got to win these two games and win the cup final. So he
can understand that.
So he can't afford to do it, to take so much of a risk. He can't afford to go to Ibrox and get thumped. Or lose.
I can understand that. Yeah, definitely.
So getting on to that, what's your gut feel about whether Neil Lennon will or won't be manager next season?
Now, this is another really difficult one to consider because there's two viewpoints here. Number one is Neil Lennon knows the club. Mm-hmm. He's very settled. He has, to his credit, been unbeaten so far, which was the requirement when he came to the club back in February. If he wins the Scottish Cup to get the treble, then he has fulfilled everything that was required of him when he took that job. So it's difficult to see a case against Neil Lennon at that point. However, I can see the argument for getting a new manager and changing a new direction. But we really need to be careful here because the whole thing about 8 in a row is that hopefully it's going to lead to 9 in a row and ultimately to 10 in a row, mm-hmm. 10 being the magic number. So if that's the case, then as supporters and the directors as well, have to look at that and say, who represents the best chance of getting the 10? Is it Neil Lennon who is well known and respected and knows the lie of the land? Or do we take a big leap in the dark and bring in a fairly high profile manager who doesn't know Scottish football, doesn't know the club, hasn't a clue what he's got in terms of his playing staff? That is a big leap in the dark. So if we were not going for 10 in a row, if we weren't going for 9 in a row and then the 10, I would be leaning towards getting a new manager and getting a new direction. However, if you're serious about the 9 and you want to get the 10, then for me it makes sense to give Neil Lennon a job. But the difficulty for the directors is that then if Neil Lennon doesn't get it, then they've made the wrong decision. And if they bring a new manager in and he doesn't get the 10, then again they've made the wrong decision. So it's all about making the right decision. And the problem I've got at the moment is people say to me, who would you pick? Would you pick Lennon? Well, it's difficult to know unless you know who the other candidates are. None of us know that yet.
Yeah.
Because we can easily pull names out of a hat. You can easily say, well, I'd rather have Neil Lennon and Davy Moyes or Stevie Clark or whoever you can mention. But you can only really give a truthful answer to this question if you are aware of the people who are also in the mix.
Yeah, I mean,
and if you're not privy to that knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, well, I'd rather have Neil Lennon because I don't want Davy Moyes. But Davy Moyes might not even be on the list of people we're talking about. You know,
that's my point.
As you say, the sort of extreme example would be, well, we should just appoint Neil Lennon because he knows the club. Right, okay, so we knock back Pep Guardiola, who's decided to leave Man City and join Celtic. I mean, I know that's not going to happen, but you get my point. You don't know who is, you know, as Mark Cooper and I have talked about. I mean, this is one of the things that I think Brendan with special circumstances, right? Because despite what he's done, he had a connection with the club. He had an understanding of the club. I don't think he was quite as massive a Celtic fan as he liked, as he tried to make out. But I actually think most football people I've met are not as big as fans as you and I are. The point I always make is because when it gets to 13, 14, when we really, really, really start to become emotionally involved as fans, that's the point when they have to stop going because they're playing so much football. So he was, you know, in terms of the, but we can't sign tier 1, 2, 3, 4 level of player because they're now earning a salary that's way beyond us, right? But we can get the sort of tier 2 level manager. You know, Brendan Rodgers was in the top 10 paid managers in the UK last year. His basic salary was 1.8, and by the time he chucked in all his bonuses, it was 4 million quid. There's very few managers in European football out with the Pep Guardiola's, Klopp's and that sort of level.
The biggies.
Who would be earning more than that? So I actually think it's the one area where we can get closer to being to the elite teams is in the recruitment of a manager. Plus, you're then offering a manager the opportunity to come to a club that's got highest revenue outside the top five leagues, second highest wage bill outside the top five leagues, and has got a few bob in the bank. And access and the chance of Champions League qualification.
It's a high profile job. There's a big support. There's a big stadium. I tell you what, you're making a good point here, because let's take off the top of my head Rafa Benitez as a case in point.
Yeah.
Now, see, Rafa Benitez leaves Newcastle and somebody's contract's up, apparently, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So he if he wants to stay in the game as a manager, then he has enjoyed the big clubs. Like he was good. He was very successful with Valencia. He had relative success at Liverpool. He went to Real Madrid. So he has been there, seen it, and done it. Now, at this point in his career, he may be looking to himself and saying, "Well, rather than joining another English Premiership club and finishing 15th and 16th, and not really having anything exciting, then Celtic may be an attraction because." You will be fighting out for the league title. You will be winning trophies. You will potentially be in the Champions League should you come through the qualifiers. It's a big club, big atmosphere, big support at home games. We tick a lot of boxes that would make somebody interested in the job. And I understand when he's manager at Liverpool or whatever, he may not want to come to us. But at this time in his career, he may see us as good an option as what is going to be available to him.
Well, the other thing about that is, for that type of manager, we also have to accept that, see, someone like that, we'll get them for 2, maximum 3 years.
Yeah, because they'll get fed up.
Because they'll get fed up going to Hamilton and Motherwell. Yeah, we've got to accept that. So then it's also about making sure that we've got the structure in place that these type, if that's the level of manager. So the things I've heard are, Peter Lawler wants Neil Lennon, likes Neil Lennon, chuffed to bits that, you know, Peter Lawler was a Celtic fan, so he's also chuffed to bits that Neil Lennon was prepared to walk into the club at a moment's notice when Brendan walked out.
And I think we should be grateful for that, because it's easy to take for granted what Neil Lennon has done. Because he came at a difficult time. The club could easily have imploded by the disappointment of Brendan's departure. Now, there was two things there that are really important. Number one, the fans rallied. Mm-hmm. And that was the important thing. The fans never turned on the board. The fans turned on Brendan and saw him for what he was. And rallied around the cause of Celtic and of Neil Lennon. Another thing as well is, Lennon came in there and probably the performances haven't been what we'd hoped for. But certainly in terms of results, as I said earlier there, he's ticked all the boxes. And he did what was required when he was given that job.
So, Peter Lawler wants Lennon. But the other thing I've also heard is, so Dermot strikes me as the type of guy that we've probably all met, who sometimes he knows the Celtic result when he reads it in the paper on a Monday morning. Right? He would always call himself a Celtic fan, but goes through peaks and troughs. So the other thing I've heard is Brendan Dermot has been turned on to his interest in Celtic by Brendan, because Brendan's made us really excited. You know, he's created an atmosphere around the club, winning trophies. So the other thing, and the other thing I've heard is that Dermot is really interested in Celtic at the moment, and he quite fancies a sexy name.
Mm-hmm.
And to be spending money in the summer. So he is the one who, and the people who've told me, I don't disbelieve him, he's met with Jose Mourinho twice. Now, I don't know whether Jose Mourinho might have met with 20 clubs twice, or he might have met, you know, you don't know, you just know our interest is we've met with Jose Mourinho. You don't know whether, I know that Leon are interested in, and that Sevilla are interested in him, right?
But I'll tell you about Mourinho right off. Mourinho is a high profile manager.
Yeah.
And he's also a guy who doesn't like to be viewed as a loser.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Leon is a bit disappointing because Leon are they're a Champions League club. I mean, they get into the Champions League virtually every season, and they play in a league which is far in excess of what we're playing in here. But what Jose Mourinho won't want is, you'll never see Jose Mourinho going to Leicester. You would never see Jose Mourinho, I don't think he would take Seville even, because when you've been the Real Madrid manager, obviously going to Seville is going to be
he's turned Seville down because for that very reason.
Yeah, but so he's got an ego, and he has to play to that ego. So again, a wee bit like the Benitez thing, Celtic would massage his ego, and as much as he would win, you have to think that he would be successful here, given that he's managerial pedigree.
Yeah.
And the advantage that we have in terms of finance, everybody else. So we would fit the bill, I think, for Mourinho if he was interested to come to a smaller league.
Yeah,
that is the main consideration.
The counter to that is, he might want to step down to Seville, but would he want to step down to Scottish football as a whole?
Yeah.
Is he still a football suited to Celtic? You know, he's a checkbook manager. You know, he's not a project manager. So there's other things there. The other thing is, he's met with Benitez. Dermot's met with Benitez, and initially, I was told Benitez met Dermot out of courtesy, because that's what people do.
Mm-hmm.
But he wouldn't come to Scottish football. But I got a text last night saying, actually, his issue is that he wants to stay. His wife wants to stay close to the north of England.
Mm-hmm.
And like I just said, you know, these types of guys, someone like Celtic, they could put up with Scotland for maybe two to 3 years.
Yeah.
And that it was maybe a 25-30% chance that Benitez might consider Celtic. That's what I was told yesterday. So you've got that in it. What do you make of the fact that, you know, some people saying surely if we were going to appoint Lennon, we would have appointed him anyway by now?
Well,
surely you can't just be, if he wins the cup, we appoint him. If he doesn't win the cup, we don't.
No, I think you need to consider all your options, and it would be foolish either way to either make Lennon the manager or say, no, you're not getting it. And I think it also makes sense as well, regardless of what's going to happen, is that you do wait to the end of the season to see what transpires. Because if Lennon goes to Ibrox on Sunday and wins 3-0 and then plays Hearts in the Scottish Cup final and beats Hearts 3-0 in the final, very difficult to then say that we should take a gamble on somebody else when you've already got a guy in who is making his mark and doing the things that we winning the trophies that we want Celtic to win.
Yeah, and equally, you look at Man United.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you Man United now regret appointing Solskjaer.
I'll bet they do as well.
And not just waiting to the end of the season. Because again, you never know. I mean, what if Benitez thinks to himself, with things progressing, do you know what, actually going to Scotland, you know, he's, you know, like all sort of elite people, he's got a bit of an ego. You know, actually, I've thought about it, going to Scotland, you know, winning this 10 in a row that they're going for, seeing if I could do something with them to make them a team that can do something, that can get to the last 16 mm-hmm. in Champions League. I'll give that a couple of years and see where I am then.
Yeah.
You know, some, you know, he changed his mind and decides to think like that, and you've just blown it because you've decided to stick with Neil Lennon. Not to say that Neil Lennon's a bad choice. I'm not picking one way or the other. I'm just saying that's the benefit of keeping your options open.
But that's the problem when we're discussing this. There is no right and wrong here. You can't tell immediately if it's a good appointment or a bad appointment. It's only in 2 years' time, when we're either celebrating 10 in a row or we're sitting sick, that we didn't get 10 in a row and we've missed probably the opportunity of a lifetime. And I think we're in a situation where, as I said there, that under normal circumstances, if you didn't have the whatever it is in a row in front of us, then I would be tempted to get a different type of manager and bring somebody else in. But I do lean towards Neil Lennon in as much as he represents a safe pair of hands for those people who see the 10 in a row as the be-all and end-all, which most of us do, because now we're at 8, it would really be heart gut-wrenching if we fail to get 9 and ultimately fail to get 10.
And then 11, and then 12.
Well, yeah, we were talking about that just before we came in earlier. The 10's a magic number, but who's to say we're going to stop at 10?
So back onto this week's game. So, what would your team be for Saturday?
Well,
not what you think, what Lennon. Because I'll ask you two things: what would your team be, and what do you think Lennon's team will be?
Right, my team would be Bain in goals. I would stick with the back four of Lustig, Simunovic, Ayer. Now, if Tierney is willing to play and it isn't an issue, then I would play Tierney at left back. If it means resting him for the cup final, then I would be happy to see Johnny Hayes play left back or Izaguirre. So that might be a weak link, but we would just need to run with that. In midfield, I would still have Brown and McGregor as your two. James Forrest in the right. I would be tempted to put Ewan Henderson in the number 10 role,
mm-hmm.
purely simply to give at least one boy a game. Mm-hmm. I would be tempted to play Ollie Burke in the left, because I think his strong running and an attacking ability to attack in a break would be a real problem for the Rangers defence, and I would have Eddie up front.
I mean, I think if you're not playing with Tierney, whoever's left back, whether it's Izaguirre or Hayes, is going to be a weaker option.
Yeah, so they're a weak one.
And bearing in mind that Tavernier's their attacking threat, he's a poor defender, but he's attacking threat. So you need to do something that deals with Tavernier. So that means either putting somebody on that's making Tavernier having to think about his defensive element to stop overloading our left back, or you put somebody on the left hand side that protects the left back, so you play Izaguirre and Hayes or something like that. But, so that's your team. What do you think Lennon's going to do?
I do think that given the circumstances that he's not been appointed yet, he will want to win, therefore he will put out the strongest team. And I think there's also an element of respect to Neil Lennon, in as much as he will show Rangers respect by playing the strongest team against the people who are calling for, you know, put out Gamboa at right back and play, I don't know, Scott Allen in midfield or something like that. It almost is a noise up to Rangers. I don't think Lennon's got that in him. I think he will treat them with respect, but he will also want to win, because he will want to have that notch so that I'll bring him closer to being the permanent manager.
I mean, I think demonstrated by Tierney playing against Aberdeen was two things. One, that it's Lennon's first choice. to play Tierney. Mm. But two, once the game was tied up, he took Tierney off. So part of the dilemma that he's got is he no doubt will want to play Tierney in the cup final. So if we are nursing Tierney through, that means, does he not play Tierney at Ibrox, not play him against Hearts? And then the other place where he's got a real dilemma is Edouard up front. Because what if he plays Edouard up front and
he gets injured?
And he gets injured. Rangers start kicking us around the park.
It's a big dilemma in what to do, but I just think with only three fixtures left, then there is a temptation for Lennon to play the strongest team and be damned.
And as we say, you know, again from his position. And again, the other thing that I have heard is that Neil Lennon's agent's not 100% certain that Lennon should take the job.
Well, that's just silly, because I don't see teams kicking doors down to get Neil Lennon. And I have to say that I do rate him as a manager. I thought he did a wonderful job.
He was in the caretaker job at Leicester.
Yeah, that would have made sense.
But I think his agent's attitude is, there's so many Celtic fans who want a sexy name that the minute, whenever Lennon gets a job, whenever the minute we go through, as all teams do at some point, the minute we go through an uncomfortable spell of losing a game and drawing a couple or doing something like that, the fans will really turn against him.
That was the problem I was alluding to earlier. If Neil Lennon gets the job, right, and we lose the first game of the season, then the board get it in the neck for, you shouldn't have appointed him. You should have went for a guy with more experience, maybe, right? A bigger name.
Yep.
If they get the big name in and they lose the first game of the season, the same supporters turn in and go, what did you do that for? You should have stuck with Lennon, because he was a man who knew the club. And so unless we get 10 in a row, whatever decision it is going to be the wrong decision.
Yeah.
The only correct decision is, regardless of who the manager is, if we get 10.
So what's and your, that's the difference. What's your prediction for the result on Saturday?
Oh, it's a hard one. I think that given the fact that there's only been a goal between the clubs in three previous occasions, I think it'll be very, very narrow, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was 2-1 for us.
Who's going to score the goals?
I've got great hopes for Edouard, actually, in the last three games. I think that he's a boy who, he's a wee bit like Dembele in as much as he will respond in a big occasion. You know, when it comes to European games, Rangers games, semi-finals, finals, you know, he's rarely been found wanting.
He's got not a bad record against Rangers.
Yeah, and so the hope is that he'll be the man to get the goals. And you also have to say that, you know, the likes of James Forrest is always likely to chip in with a goal or two. So, and then.
So it's an Edouard Forrest double then?
Yeah, that would suit me fine. Though.
All right, okay. On that positive note, I will say, St Anthony, thanks very much.
Very enjoyable, Harry. Thanks very much.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Oh, you enjoyed that with me and St Anthony. As I said, we've no idea what the situation is going to be with the manager, whoever it is. Hopefully they're going to take us to 9 and then 10 and 11 and 12 and 13, etc. in a row. Talked earlier at the beginning of the podcast about the Celtic FC Foundation bucket collection. It's now the annual thing that happens, collect for the foundation on the last game of the season, which is Trophy Day. And if you've been contributing and putting your money in a bucket, you'll have got your badge for titles 1 through 7. So it's now number 8. You want to get the whole set when we get to 10. If you want to assist in that, the foundation are looking for 120 volunteers being placed in all turnstile areas before the game. So if you're interested in volunteering, you can register by emailing cfcfoundation for Celtic FC Foundation. So CFC Foundation at celticfc.co.uk, or you can call 0141 551 4204. And if you're really lucky, you might get to be on the same turnstile as me. Yep. So I'll see you on Badge Day. This is me, Harry Brady. That was in St. Andrew, saying goodnight and God bless. Goodnight. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine.